You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The evidence is gone, but the nightmare continues. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
The appeals process is beginning for Richard Allen, the man who's been convicted of being the Delphi murderer. Despite the lack of evidence, despite the questionable ways of the court and Judge Gull and the laundry list of, I would just say, misdeeds, maybe I think you could probably even classify some as crimes if you really want to look into it further on the part of the state. But the process is beginning. Joining me to discuss, Eric Faddis, defense attorney. It's all beginning with the defense of Richard Allen putting a motion out the other day. Hey, we'd like you to preserve the evidence in this case. And Gull comes back saying, it's too vague. The evidence in the case. Let's just... the evidence from this case, can we preserve that? Too generic. So now they're going to have to go by, yeah, give a laundry list. If they miss something, I guess Gull burns it in her butt fireplace or something. At this point, what the hell is going on here? Why be so difficult? Why is she doing this? I mean, it does not look good, but I guess they've passed that road a thousand miles ago.
You know, a request to preserve evidence and make sure it's accessible is pretty darn reasonable, pretty darn commonplace, something that most judges wouldn't bat an eye over and would say, yeah, of course we'll do that. In this case, when there's already been a lot of questions about the impartiality of Judge Gold, about how hostile she's been to defense, now there's an element of secrecy that she is bringing into this case that will hopefully be addressed on appeal, but is also raising the eyebrows of everyone watching it.
That's the thing with this case, and I think it's been the whole time. At first, I think a lot of us were looking at it going, well, there's a lot of incompetence here. It's a smaller town department. They don't have the experience. They're trying to do their best, kind of, maybe, I don't know, or they're just going down in a very blindsided way. But as this has continued to progress, and the feeling that there is just a solid brick wall up here, just at the starting point of Richard Allen trying to make his arguments, they're like, nope, we're not getting anywhere. This is what we think you did, and you can't argue anything otherwise. And that's pretty much how this whole case has been. Are there any mechanisms out there for this court system, for this city, for their police department to be investigated and see what the hell is going on here? Is this all incompetence? Is this all people's ego that cannot be flattened or questioned, and then it's just lie after lie after lie to prevent that? Or is there something going on here where somebody is trying to cover something up for someone? And does this go much deeper? Because it certainly is looking more and more like that over and over. What kind of mechanisms exist for something like this, especially we talk about the judicial end of it?
You know, the first line of defense, so to speak, will be the appellate process. And in theory, you're going to get an appellate judge who looks at this case. So there's absolutely going to be an appeal. No question about that. You're going to get an appellate judge with hopefully objective eyes who is going to look at this and say, oh, you know, the judge's call on this, that was right. The judge's call on this, I don't agree with it, but it wasn't error. The judge's call on this was a huge problem. Hopefully you have someone who will look at that in a fair way. And if the case is not overturned, you know, the other options are not that viable. You could request that the FBI look into the police department and make sure there was nothing improper going on there. That look in the court system. The FBI is not going to be inclined to do that when the person making the request has been convicted of double child homicide.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, initially they pushed the FBI out too. They don't want the attention. They don't. There's something here. It feels like they don't want another set of eyes looking at. And again, it could be something very, very simple that, you know, just ended up snowballing into this hellhole. But there's so many questions to this case. The evidence, the records to this case, they're all sealed. I mean, that's fairly standard, I think, in something like this, especially for going to appeals, that this information wouldn't be out there, the argument being it could jeopardize witnesses' safety and the case's integrity. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I practice primarily in Colorado. And so certainly after a trial is done, there is efforts to contain all of the evidence in the trial, make sure it's available for the appellate court. But I think that Judge Gold is adding a layer of obfuscation here in that some of this stuff is being kept under seal. It's only accessible to certain folks. And I'm just not sure why that's so important. If there's already been a trial, there's already been a conviction, so what if the witnesses learn about other evidence that's in the case? I just am not totally buying their arguments of like investigation integrity when the investigation of the case is over.
Is the appellate court going to have everything that they need to look at this with consideration adequately? Or are there stops in this that Gull couldn't put in place herself that may not give even the appellate court the full picture of the extent of what's going on here?
Well, one concern is what the defense doesn't know about. There's a lot of stuff they don't know about. They've asked for records. They've asked for information. They've made multiple requests like this, many of which were denied. And so what is in the file cabinet at that, you know, sort of arcane police department? What's in the drawer of the judge's clerk? These are things we don't know. So hopefully the appellate court will have an appropriate record on which to base an opinion. But there are always things that might escape the view of the court that could have an impact.
Well, and then that's the thing. It feels like the court's view, the court's prism, Gull's prism that she's looking through, and this has been extremely skewed the whole time. So this evidence that was not given to the defense in discovery simply because Gull said not needed, not part of it, even though it really is part of it, how does something like that get changed? Can another court override Gull and say, look, you got to give it all because this was not fairly played?
Another court, an appellate court could look at it and say, hey, Judge Gull was wrong in denying this request, but the problem they're going to run up against is we don't know how valuable or important the non-disclosed information was because it was not disclosed. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to go to a court and say, hey, not only did Judge Gold screw up, but it would have had a severe impact on the case because we just don't know how compelling that information may or may not have been. And so even though there's in theory a mechanism to protect against it, in practice, it might be ineffective.
Is that information that we're talking about that is likely out there or even has been hinted at existing, or there are records of it existing, but it's never been brought up into the case. How safe is that information? Because it's in their hands. It's not in the hands of the defense right now. And as we've seen, they seem to go to quite great lengths to prevent basic information to come out on this case to the defense or to anybody that would not be beneficial to the state. Just like they lost all of the interview records and the depositions and things of that nature. Who's to say like this stuff couldn't all disappear before a retrial?
It could, and it may already be gone, Tony. We just don't know. And you know, what you hope for is some conscientious person on the inside. If there is problematic information that has not been disclosed, you hope there's someone on the inside, conscientious, who's going to look at that and say, hey, in good conscience, I can't keep this stuff secret. And we've seen similar leaks that have played out over the course of history. But, you know, if you do a FOIA request or whatever the state equivalent is there, there's no guarantee that you're going to get that stuff. It could be lost forever.
I don't believe in most conspiracy theories because there's just usually too many people involved for it to ever work. If this is a conspiracy here against Richard Allen, that means there's a lot of people involved in it. But I don't think it necessarily means that everybody would fully understand the depths to which they're participating in that conspiracy. A few people may know. Some people may just think they're doing their job because that's what they're supposed to do. And if they like to keep it, people tend to do their job, whether it be good or bad, depending on what they're being asked. Are you at all surprised that we haven't seen anyone in this case come out from like the state side or the Delphi side that said, look, there is some shady stuff going on here? Because again, there's a lot of people. And if it's a conspiracy, a lot of me thinks we would have seen at least somebody say something by now.
You know?
Yeah.
You'd certainly hope so, but in my knowledge, we haven't seen that. So what does that mean? Maybe that means there's nothing shady going on at all.
Yeah.
But maybe it means that this is a pretty darn small town, and we're talking about people in positions of power, law enforcement entities with arrest authority, judges, where we're talking about people who can really have an influence on small town life. And so there is a disincentive for anyone who might be aware of shady stuff to come forward with it.
That's a very good point. The power that a small town yields over its citizens is very different than a larger city or even a medium-sized city because everyone is so interconnected and they can be, it's like, you know, almost like high school, if you will, to a certain extent, right, where everybody kind of knows each other's business. And also I would think as well, if everybody is kind of on the same page, everybody wanted someone to be found guilty. They needed their villain in this. They think they found it. It's very easy for a lot of people to jump on that bandwagon thinking, yes, this is what we got because we believe that these people are doing their jobs correctly, despite all the evidence that they're not, and they haven't been.
Oh, totally. And in a weird sense, there's like a kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling when you have this horrible incident happens and you think you can pin it on somebody and they did, and he's convicted, and oh gosh, we can go back to our normal lives again and not think about that, regardless of the fairness of those proceedings and the accuracy of the outcome. And I think it's humans are just sort of more inclined to go along with it, especially in a small town, not you know, raise a peep about it because they could be targeted in some fashion. If that was what was happening there.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
All right, true crime addicts, let's cut the crap. You're knee-deep in the gory details of your favorite podcast when suddenly a commercial hits like a bad meal. Seriously? You deserve better. Upgrade to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, where you can binge without those annoying ads. Plus, get extended interviews that go deeper into the darkness and early access to episodes so you can be the first to know. It's like trading up from fast food to fine dining, but with more blood. So, go ahead,
Search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and feast on the good stuff.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.